brought to you by Penguin.
Expo 58 by Jonathan Coe. Read by Julian Rind-Tutt. You know, I'm half inclined to believe that there's some rational explanation to all this. Naunton Wayne to Basil Radford in The Lady Vanishes, 1938. By opening day, the American pavilion had been moulded into an espionage weapon against the Soviet Union and its allies. Robert W. Rydell, World Affairs, The Century of Progress Expositions. We're all excited about Brussels. In a note dated the 3rd of June, 1954, the Belgian ambassador in London conveyed an invitation to Her Majesty's Government of Great Britain, an invitation to take part in a new World's Fair, which the Belgians were calling the Exposition Universelle et Internationale de Bruxelles 1958. 5 months later, on the 24th of November, 1954, Her Majesty's Government's formal acceptance of the invitation was presented to the ambassador on the occasion of a visit to London by Baron Mens de Fernic, the Commissioner-General appointed by the Belgian government to undertake the work of organising the exposition. It would be the first such event since the end of the Second World War. It would be held at a time when the European nations involved in that war were moving ever closer towards peaceful cooperation and even union. And at a time, conversely, when political tensions between the NATO and Soviet bloc countries were at their height. It would be held at a time of unprecedented optimism about recent advances in the field of nuclear science. And at a time when that optimism was tempered by unprecedented anxiety about what might happen if these same advances were put to destructive rather than benign use. Symbolising this great paradox, and standing at the very heart of the exhibition site, was to be an enormous metal structure known as the Atomium, conceived and designed by a British-born Belgian engineer called André Wattakane. It would stand more than 100 metres tall and resemble in its shape the unit cell of an iron crystal, magnified 165 billion times. In the original letter of invitation, the purpose of the exhibition was described thus: to facilitate a comparison of the multifarious activities of different peoples in the fields of thought, art, science, economic affairs, and technology. Its method is to present an all-embracing view of the present achievements, spiritual or material, and the further aspirations of a rapidly changing world. Its final aim is to contribute to the development of a genuine unity of mankind based upon respect for human personality. History does not record how the British Secretary of State for Foreign Affairs reacted when he first read these impressive words, but Thomas's guess was that seeing 4 years of stress, argument and expense ahead of him, he let the invitation slip from his fingers, put his hands to his forehead and muttered, "Oh no. Those bloody Belgians." Thomas was a quiet man. That was his distinguishing feature. He worked at the Central Office of Information on Baker Street, and behind his back, his colleagues sometimes referred to him as Gandhi, because there were days when it was believed that he had taken a vow of silence. At the same time, and also behind his back, some of the secretaries had been heard to call him Gary, because he reminded them of Gary Cooper, while a rival faction knew him as Dirk, on account of a closer resemblance, in their eyes, to Dirk Bogarde. It could be agreed, at any rate, that Thomas was handsome. But he would have been astonished if anyone had ever told him this, and, once in possession of the knowledge, he would have had no idea what to do with it. Gentleness and humility were the qualities which first struck people upon meeting him. And it was only later, if at all, that they would begin to suspect a certain self-assurance, bordering on arrogance, lying beneath them. In the meantime, he was most often described as a decent sort, and the unassuming, dependable type.
Sample complete.
Ready to continue?